get your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and of course, ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. Happy Monday. Let's get you started off with the headlines you need to know from over the whole weekend. A little bit of controversy for Bills defensive lineman Ed Oliver, arrested Saturday night in his hometown of Houston on charges of driving while intoxicated and unlawfully carrying a weapon. He was taken to the Montgomery County Jail after being pulled over on State Highway 242. Both charges are misdemeanors, according to the jail's website. 22-year-old Oliver had an open beer between his legs and was determined to be impaired after a field sobriety test. It should be noted that, depending on the outcome of this, it could result in a game suspension or up to a three-game suspension for Oliver. So let's see how that plays forward. Also, controversy over the weekend comes from Kentucky sports, but not from the way you think. The University of Kentucky has dismissed the entire coaching staff and the advisor of its powerhouse cheerleading squad after a three-month internal investigation that revealed a lack of oversight by those in charge and a culture of hazing, public nudity, and alcohol use. That's according to a release Monday. Myron Metcalf, a great writer, has a great write-up on it on ESPN.com. He describes Kentucky's program as the Alabama football of the cheerleading world, winning 24 national titles in 35 years. The bulk of those championships were earned under the coach who has now been let go as a result of the hazing that they say was done by cheerleaders, two cheerleaders in front of coaches and advisors with no action taken to stop it. And lastly, in the headlines from over the weekend, NASCAR ran to Darlington. Kevin Harvick won his 50th career race as NASCAR returned over the course of the weekend. It was a 400-mile drive unlike any in modern-day NASCAR. You guys saw it, the grandstands completely empty. There wasn't a single tailgate. Nothing was happening. No parties. But there was still a race, and there was still a champion. Kevin Harvick beat Alex Bowman to win NASCAR's first race back. A spectacle closely watched as we now will keep an eye on what it means for any possible coronavirus implications post-race. Those are the headlines you need to know. First, take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance, and it's Monday. You made it through the weekend. It was a sad Sunday night, though. I'll be honest. I mean, I was just like you guys. I sat there and watched The Last Dance. I prefer the one with all the naughty language, and I sat there and watched the whole thing, and it came to a close, and I just sat there and thought, well, the heck are we going to talk about next Monday? But we know what we're going to talk about. Today, of course, it's going to be Last Dance related. We're asking you to chime in. A little bit of first take, your take fun here. What athlete or team do you want to see the next Last Dance on? So you pick the season, you pick the athlete, the team, the sport. Any of them are up for grabs. If you could get a Last Dance type documentary on any team or athlete for one season, what would it be and why? Tell us. 888-729-3776. You can also tweet me at Jason Fitz. If Twitter's any indication, we're going to get a lot of different answers on this one over the course of the next couple hours. Again, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. What athlete or team do you want the next Last Dance doc to be on? Before we get to that, let's get some takeaway from it. We'll start with some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan. 25 gigs of high-speed data. Then 2G, just $45 a month. Saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at StraightTalk.com. The Straight Talk came from Stephen A. and Max as they took a look at the finish of The Last Dance. The question is, what were their biggest takeaways from the Last Dance finale?
Well, number one, what he said about wanting to come back for a seventh ring, he thought that they would win it. That would have been interesting to see. Number two, how Reinstorf got off the hook in terms of being casted as the ultimate villain. A lot of people pointed to Jerry Krause when it was really Reinstorf. You know, he definitely had his hands in that cookie jar. But the thing for me that stood out above all else is the era in which Jordan played and the things that he had to endure on his path to success. When we see these guys in the modern day era, it's not to say they don't work hard. It's certainly not to say that they're ultra talented and things of that nature. But when I see that the road that they had to travel, and I compare that to what Jordan had to endure en route to capturing his first championship and ultimately completing his sixth, to me, it's just night and day in terms of what he had to endure compared to what the modern day players have to endure because of the rule changes that the NBA had implemented and things of that nature, the physicality of the bad boy Detroit Pistons, then followed up by Pat Riley's New York Knicks with Oakley and Anthony Mason and Xavier McDaniel before that and all of that other stuff. I just think about that road and those battles, those wars that Jordan had to endure. And to me, it just cements in my mind the fact that he is indeed the greatest of all time. And as far as I'm concerned, it's not even an argument.
Yeah, Michael Jordan's the greatest of all time, certainly at his peak. The thing that jumped out to me, honestly, and I just, like, give way to hierarchical thinking. You know, I know there's the human drama and everything, but it's just pretty obvious to me Jordan would have won 10 championships if he never would have gone into baseball and had Reinsdorf, who's really, Stephen A., you're right, he revealed himself as the villain by the end because he admitted that the economics didn't make sense. They wouldn't have been able to keep it together. Nonsense. Of course you could have kept it together. They decided not to. He was playing it cheap. Reinsdorf had that reputation in baseball also. But the 10 championships, look, the Rockets don't get those if Jordan stays. They barely got by the Knicks in 94. When I say barely, I don't just mean that it went to a game 7. In game 6, John Starks took a 3 to win it. Olajuwon got his fingertips on the ball, sending it to a game 7. I mean, they very nearly lost to the Knicks. The Bulls would have beaten them. Both seasons. And then the Bulls had at least were going to, especially as Michael Wilbon points out, in a strike-shortened season or a lockout-shortened season, that gives an older team that needs rest an advantage, in fact. And then I also point out that Scottie Pippen, the year after the strike-shortened season, which would be 2 years after Jordan left for the final time, the Bulls, in that season, Portland gave the Lakers everything they could want. Took them 7 games. The Lakers won the championship that year. And that was Scottie Pippen, Portland. You mean to tell me Scottie Pippen with Michael Jordan and whoever else they would have brought in to put around him, because Rodman was done by then, with Kukoc and everybody, doesn't get one more game than Portland did against the Lakers? But guys, even if you say, no, they would have lost this one, they would have lost that one, even a cynic would say they'd win at least 8 out of 10 years. I mean, we're just never going to see something like that again. The other thing that jumped out, Jay, and I think about you from time to time when I think about KD and how my perception of him has changed. You know, when KD goes at everyone on social media and it's a sign of insecurity and all this. And Jay, you turned my head around a little bit about this. To me, KD is simply treating people on social media the way he would treat someone with a giant media platform. In other words, he's relating to everyone as a person. Not a better or worse, just a person. There's something I like about that. Jordan, the way he went at Scott Burrell and everyone is talking about, oh, he's a bully, he goes Steve Kerr. How is that different than the way he would go at anybody? Jordan treated all competition with another person as, I'm a man, you're a man, who's better? In a way, I don't think of it as, oh, he was a bully. I think of it as, in fact, he respects the competition and, in fact, is respecting the other person just as though they're a superstar. Because as you're watching the doc, you're like, damn, Mike, really? You need to get yourself pumped up by beating up on that guy? But there was no difference between that guy to him and Larry Bird or Magic Johnson. He gave him all the business.
Max, I'm with you. It was each and every second of the day finding something that got him to that extra level of that next space mentally. And that, you know, he gave this great analogy of, you know, putting wood on the fire. That's what he looked for every single day to push him to get to that next level. There are two things that stood out to me about this documentary. Number one, this is the best sports documentary I've ever seen. I really give a lot of credit to ESPN and to Disney and to Netflix and to Brand Jordan, Jason Hare, the executive producer, for putting this whole thing together. You know, this whole thing was next level. And I've seen some great sports documentaries, from Hoop Dreams to Icarus. This one rated the best to me. And secondly, it just wasn't about the basketball accolades and could he have won, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, I think we all think he could. But it was the layers of depth.
That's some Straight Talk. Straight Talk Wireless has the full court cell phone coverage you need. Get the unlimited plan with 25 gigs of high-speed data, then 2G for just $45 a month. Saves you up to half the cost of big carriers. Everything for less. Savings may vary. See terms and conditions at straighttalk.com. So with all of this Last Dance fun being had, we've asked you guys to chime in. What athlete or team, either one, do you want to see the next Last Dance type documentary on? You can give us any team, any sport. You can tweet me at Jason Fitz. You can also call 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. I rarely see this much variety on Twitter, so I have to give you guys a lot of credit for the way you're coming into it, because we've got everything from Anthony that says he wants to see Mark Messier's 94 Stanley Cup season with the New York Rangers. Solrak says, I want to see the Bills Last Dance series of all 4 straight Super Bowl losses to see what they went through. Bubba with a good call here says Barry Bonds. We're getting a ton of these, but I happen to love this one. Jed and Wyo back to back. Jed said 08 Gators, and then Wyo said Tim Tebow, Florida Gators, God, murders, drugs, Urban, I'm in for all of this. What athlete or team do you want to see the next Last Dance on? Bill in Florida, what do you got, man?
Hey, I think the whole dominance of Michael Phelps through all the different Olympics would be an epic, all-American type documentary that we'd love to watch.
Oh, yeah. Well, heck yeah. I mean, you talk about All-American and the Olympic moments for him, but also just the attempt to find scandal around him at so many different times, too. Like, it feels like Phelps is sort of in this moment where there's so much to learn about him. Part of what made Jordan this a great documentary is because we didn't know as much. So I'm all in on Phelps. I like that one as a call. Tyler in Washington, what do you got as what you think the next Last Dance doc should be on?
This might be an easy one, but I think Tiger Woods, just because he's already got so much exposure since the time he was, 4 or 5 years old. And then, following his dad around and through the cheating scandal, I think it'd be awesome to get a behind-the-scenes look, deep-dive look, really see what he went through during the cheating scandal and then the rise back to winning the Masters. I think that would just be awesome.
Oh, yeah, you're totally right about that. The only thing I'd say with Tigers, we've seen so much of, it feels like Tigers live so publicly. But, yeah, I'm with you. The rise and fall and re-rise, I mean, that all comes together pretty easy. Dale in Texas, what do you got? What do you want the next Last Dance documentary to be on?
Got to be the Jimmy Johnson Cowboys of the early 90s. It had it all. They had to do away with the old regime. It had Tom Landry, Jerry Jones, all the player dynamics, Michael Irvin, what they call the White House, and then Barry Switzer coming in, the Herschel Walker trade, all of that. It would be fascinating.
Oh, my God, to get behind the scenes of that. That is a great call because you're talking about so much drama to be had anyway. Like, if I could get a real peek behind the curtain on whatever has actually happened between Jerry Jones and Jimmy Johnson to that level, and also get the extra peek behind the curtain on some of the players that we know were they were having a good time. They were putting themselves in a, let's say, a situation where they could have a lot of fun. Oh, man, that would be absolutely spectacular. Will in Missouri, let's get one more in here real quick. What athlete or team do you want to see the next Last Dance doc on?
You bet, man. Thanks for taking my call. The 96 Yankees have always been my favorite. I was a big Fox fan when the Red Sox lost to the Mets in the 80s, and to see him get his championship on horseback. You had everybody else in there, Mariano Rivera. We got Jeter stories. Don Zimmer was still alive, but Joe Torre, everything, all the aspects with everybody that went, everybody on the team back then with Paul O'Neill, Larritz, and everybody, Girardi, I think, was still on that team. The 96 World Series Yankees team would be my Last Dance. I'd sit and watch it for days.
Look, there's a great call portion to that, too, because it's around Major League Baseball. And, again, I think one of the things that made The Last Dance truly special is that we didn't have the level of, let's say, insight into everybody's life that we do now for so many athletes. So when you talk about getting into that era or any era of Major League Baseball, it becomes a little bit of what we thought we knew versus a lot of what we had no idea about. And that's what made The Last Dance interesting. That's why I think, frankly, any of these that was a true behind the scenes on a moment in Major League Baseball could be absolutely great for the sport, be great for the players, and be great for the fans because it gives you a bigger peek behind the curtain. We're going to keep taking your calls on what athlete or team you want to see the next Last Dance doc on. Plus, I've got some thoughts on it. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive's Home Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Before we do that, though, I want to switch gears a little bit. There was some big news that came out Friday afternoon about the possibility that owners are going to talk about a plan that could incentivize teams in the NFL. It could move them up in the draft if they hire a minority as a head coach, as a coordinator even, or as a general manager. So they had a lot to say about that on First Take today. Sam Acho joined in the conversation on ESPN Radio and talked a little bit about his thoughts on incentivizing for hiring minority candidates. This is what he said Sunday morning on ESPN Radio.
The problem is it can't be about incentives. It's got to be about giving the right coaches the right opportunities. The problem with the NFL is that there's so much cronyism. It's all about who you know. Oftentimes, NFL coaches aren't the best coaches. They're not. That's why for me and a ton of players, you get happy when you get a coach who's actually a good coach, not just the guy who knew a guy who knew a guy. That's what happens. I got a buddy, gets in the door, and all of a sudden he becomes a position coach or a linebacker coach or a head coach or whatever, as opposed to giving the best possible candidates an opportunity. So do I think an incentive system is the way? No.
So one thing to stress here, and I want everybody to go check it out. Jim Trotter is the one that reported on this. Jim does spectacular work and has been at the forefront of reporting on this a lot. To break down a few things that are broken that he talks about in his report, it would award a fifth-round compensatory pick to any team whose minority assistant leaves to become a coordinator, so it incentivizes that. It would award a third-round compensatory pick for any team with a minority coach or front office member who leaves to become a head coach, so it incentivizes that. And then the big part of it is the draft portion of it. A team that hires a person of color as its senior football executive would move up 10 spots in the third round during the draft prior to that executive's second season. So that's a big move. And you hire a minority head coach, you'd move up 6 spots in the third round during the draft following their second season. So it truly is a plan to incentivize. It has not been put into action yet. It's just being proposed. So this is what Stephen A. and Max had to say on the possibility of incentivizing teams for hiring minorities.
I love it. I don't love the particulars. I don't love the specifics. It's a gimmick. It's a gadget. I mean, it's no plan, no real thought to it whatsoever. We get that. So that's not why I'm saying I love it, because this wouldn't work. You don't want to be a black man hired under these conditions, because you would be the epitome of what they call an affirmative action hire, somebody mm-hmm. that they deemed unqualified for the position that just got it because of this. And you definitely would be excoriated, at least privately within NFL circles. No black coach wants to be hired under those conditions. So in regards to that, that certainly would not be the case. But the reality is that if you think about why I love it so much, I love that it provokes the conversation. I want to applaud all the people covering the NFL. I want to applaud my brother who used to work at ESPN but is now at the NFL Network, Jim Trotter, who broke the story and has been all mm-hmm. over it. Props to him for pointing out some of those things. From what I've been told by folks in the NFL, this is not an NFL thing. Several owners went to other owners and the NFL proposing this. This is not something that's officially been mandated or is being considered for to be mandated by the NFL per se. It was presented by a few owners who want to address this issue. And that's why I'm excited about it, because now the conversation has been provoked. The conversation has been stirred. And that is what I think is the most important thing to peel from this. We're finally able to have this discussion. We got four minority coaches in the National Football League. Three of them happen to be African-American. We've got two offensive coordinators in Eric Bieniemy in Kansas City and Byron Leftwich in Tampa. If I've missed anybody, please excuse me. I apologize. But those are two of the top five offenses in football. Max Kellerman has mm-hmm. has religiously highlighted the fact that analytics and beyond have all pointed out that you go the route of offensive coordinators in order to give somebody a head coaching job. That's usually the pipeline. We've got we've got about 8 to 10 blacks who are defensive coordinators, but only about a couple who are offensive coordinators, and the guys getting hired are usually coming from that offensive coordinator pool. Here's my issue. When we think about that, we have to point out the fact that, excuse me, everybody talk about who you know. Well, there's a pipeline to consider here. Where's the pipeline? Usually when you have individuals coming out of college, they played at a high level. They were all Americans or whatever the case may be. They usually leave without their degree, and therefore that increases the unlikelihood that they'll get hired for a college job. If you ain't getting hired for a college job, chances are you're going to have that much tougher of a time getting hired for the pro jobs. That's not necessarily the issue with some of the white coaches coming out of college who may not have had that kind of cachet as collegiate players or even pro players, but they ingratiated themselves with the right people, got opportunities. So there's no pipeline for us. And I think that's something to be pointed out here on both the college and the pro level. When I think about Cliff Kingsbury, Max, I hate to bring his name up because he's done nothing to me. I have nothing against the man. Never met him, don't know him. But I do know this. He wasn't qualified to be no damn head coach on the NFL level based on his resume. Not at Texas Tech. Not the non-job that he had at USC, because he never really started it. Because before he got a chance to show up for work, he got hired as a head coach by the Arizona Cardinals, bypassing anything. So my last point is, excuse me, you want to resolve this? We want to bring solutions to the table, whether it's special teams or offense or defensive. How about mandating that you have to be a coordinator in order to get a head coaching job? Therefore, you have an objective criteria available to us all that we're able to look at you and say, excuse me, here's what you've done, and this is why you're qualified for consideration for a head coaching job in the National Football League. And because that process would become public, now we're all in a position to critique it objectively and accurately, and the issue of fairness is being addressed because it's in an open forum as opposed behind a curtain where we don't know what the hell is going on other than people having coffee or drinks together at night and getting high because somebody likes them.
You mentioned affirmative action, Stephen A. I love when people decry affirmative action, several years or decades of it. The reason it exists is because of 400 years of negative action. Unless you believe black men can't coach in the NFL. If you believe that, not you, obviously, Stephen A., the proverbial you. If you believe that, then sure, then you'd be against affirmative action because you don't acknowledge the negative action that led to the circumstances where you even believe that. But this is actually a scathing indictment of the NFL. It's good that they're trying something, but it's an indictment. Why? You need to incentivize franchises this much in order to not eliminate a pool of candidates, right? So why is that? It would suggest that hiring a black head coach hurts the team. No, it helps the team. What hurts your team, not black per se, but what hurts the team, what hurts any business, is automatically, essentially, eliminating a pool of candidates. This is the essential argument, if you don't just believe in the moral argument, the business argument for you know, against sexism or all kinds of prejudice, right? Why eliminate an enormous population of potential candidates?
Let's first take your take on ESPN Radio and ESPN News. One thing that needs to be analyzed through all of this, most importantly, is giving everybody a better chance to evaluate. And I'll go back to quickly, Dominic Foxworth has an article that was put up on The Undefeated, and I think it's over a year old at this point, from last year, talking about what we really need is a scouting combine for prospective NFL head coaches. Owners, GMs, teams need more opportunity to get familiar with what everybody's actually capable of. Dominique speaks on this smarter than most of us combined can, and I think it's important to understand that through all of this, we need to help people make better decisions in who they're hiring, not just by incentivizing anything, but by making sure that people are actually finding the most qualified candidate. It's not as easy as it sounds for so many teams. You know it. If your favorite team's bad, how often are they bad? Partially because they made a terrible hire in the GM position or at a head coach. So first take your take, ESPN Radio, ESPN News. We're going to keep taking your take. What athlete or team do you want the next Last Dance documentary to be on? Plus, only one non-Celtics player ever won 7 rings. So should the Bulls regret not going for a 7th? You'll hear about that next as the guys react to it. First take your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. We're presented by Progressive Insurance and brought to you by My Computer Career, training for a better life. Shameless plug if you're into the Disney Music sing-along thing. Disney Music just tweeted out a little video. A little Disney sing-along fun has now made it out to the world. I can't watch it. I'm on air right now. But they put a medley together. They'd asked some of us at ESPN to do a little sing-along video. So they've made a medley of me doing some Lion King, and then L. Duncan is in it, and Mark Spears. So go check it out. Have a little fun and watch some Disney sing-along. I just tweeted out the link so you can find it at Jason Fitz. You can find it wherever you consume your Disney social. It's out there to be had. We're asking you guys, what athlete or team do you want the next Last Dance documentary to be on? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. You can pick any team, any athlete, any year. What do you want that documentary to be on? Mike in Virginia, what do you got? What's your take on this one?
Hey, Jason, I want something different. I want amateurism with John Wooden, Bill Walton, and Al Cinder.
Oh, man, you're going all the way back to those UCLA teams. Mike, I love that call because, again, it provides context. And I think that's the most powerful thing as we get through The Last Dance. I've said it repeatedly, but the guys that work with me on the show, they're younger than I am. So we have different sort of memories of that era, right? So for me, The Last Dance era was all about sort of the prime of fandom for me, whether it's the early 90s to the late 90s. That was a prime area of fandom for me watching the NBA. So I watched and lived and loved every second of that. If you're younger, you need that introduction to some of what you've heard about. But when you actually see it, it's more powerful. powerful. When you take that far of a dip back into something like the wooden era, you're accomplishing the same thing. You're giving people perspective to something that they wouldn't otherwise see. And we forget about amateurism for some of those greats that we now only think of for their NBA greatness. I love that one. Let's get one more in real quick. Kevin in Missouri, what do you got as an athlete or team you want to see the next Last Dance on?
Well, it's actually two teams, Jason. By the way, I want to say you're the best addition to ESPN in a long time, with the possible exception of that young lady from the WNBA, who I think Mike Golic and her should get married and give birth to a lot of power forwards. But
Chiney and Golic would make a beautiful – you are right about that. But thank you for the kind words. Go ahead. Oh, we lost him. We lost him. He had so many positive things to say. Call back in. We'll let you get through. And you're right. I mean, I'm willing to play matchmaker. Chiney Ogwumike and Mike Golic Jr. would make a heck of a couple. I'm just saying, guys. I'm putting it out there for the world. You guys do with it what you choose. All right. So while we get more of your take, what athlete or team do you want the next Last Dance documentary to be on? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Before we get there was a little nugget sort of buried at the end of The Last Dance. And I can't believe it was buried. Like, they could have done a whole episode. As we find out at the end, that Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls, did in fact call Phil Jackson after everything was said and done and said, you deserve the chance to run it back if you want to. And according to Reinsdorf, Phil wasn't interested in coaching a team that was going to be rebuilding. So they showed all of this to Michael Jordan, who was a little shocked by it and said he's never talked to Reinsdorf. Another shocking admittance to me. I wanted a whole episode on all of that, but it raises a real question, because MJ ended the Last Dance documentary by essentially saying, we could have come back, we should have come back, we should have gone for a seventh. The question is, Stephen A. and Max broke it down. Should the Bulls regret not going for seven?
Reinsdorf played them cheap. He played them cheap. For those who would say, well, they already had the highest, you know, the salary cap was 20 or 5, 30 million, and they were spending 60 million. Of course they're spending twice the cap. Of course they are. Grandfathering in contracts because they're winning the championship every year. Do you know how much more valuable it is? Not just in terms of operating costs, meaning like revenue, less operating costs, what your profit is year to year, but in the equity built in that franchise and in the league, where $1 turned into what? 50 over not that many years? The league was expanding so fast, and the Bulls' value was skyrocketing because of all this. Even when owners talk about, guys, well, we're at an operating loss, stop it for a year or two, but your team is that much more valuable. So you blew it with Scottie Pippen. Reinsdorf did by letting Krause play hardball with him up until the final second. And now, right, you'd have to way overpay for Pippen. So give him a dollar less than you gave Jordan the following year. Oh, my God, but we'd be operating at a $50 million loss. And no, you wouldn't. Stop it. Does anyone really believe that when you factor everything in? The Bulls would have lost money on that deal, winning another championship, or at least trying. Management blew it. That's why they called it The Last Dance. Doesn't matter if Phil Jackson goes 82-0 before the season starts. We're breaking this thing up. Subsequent events showed they were wrong. They didn't know how to rebuild. And based on who else won the championship, there was a very good possibility the Bulls win two more after that one. So, yes, if I'm a player, I am not content, or rather, no, I'm not content with what happened because it was out of our hands.
I definitely think they should be content. You went to six NBA finals. You won all six of them. And the two that you probably would have had that you didn't get was because Jordan decided to retire because of a combination of a slew of things. You know, obviously his father had passed away. His rise, his cachet, his brand had exploded. He was inundated. He talked about not having a life, being stuck in his hotel room, couldn't walk the streets, couldn't do anything, and how it was an adjustment. He had to reset. He had lost a passion for the game of basketball. It's entirely plausible that they might have lost inside that two-year area because of how everything outside of basketball was getting to him so much, because he was so inundated and his level of popularity had soared and elevated to astronomical proportions, and it was a lot for him to take. He might not have ended up winning one of those 2 years because of all of that stuff. We've seen that happen before. We've seen people fold and succumb to outside forces, and because of it, it found a way to just infiltrate the proceedings and get in the way of what their ultimate goal was. I believe, however, he would have ended up with at least seven titles, possibly eight. I don't believe, and Jalen and I were discussing this on Get Up earlier in the morning, I don't believe that the Indiana Pacers would have beaten the Bulls if the Bulls were going for a seventh title. They lost to the Knicks in six games. It was no Patrick Ewing there. It was Latrell Sprewell, and Allen Houston dropped 36 in a game six, and Larry Johnson was there, even though in the closeout game, Marcus he wasn't Camby. That phenomenal. The bottom line is, Marcus Camby was coming off the bench at that particular moment in time, Max, but I'm just saying to you that if you're going to lose to the Knicks at that particular moment in time, I don't think it's implausible to believe that the Bulls could have taken you out that year. Now, I think the next year, when the Lakers and the Pacers met, I think the Bulls would have come up short that year, but I think at the lockout shortened season of 1999, I think that the Bulls, because of a lockout shortened season, would not have had as much wear and tear on them. They would have definitely had seven, possibly eight, but not 10 titles.
First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. That last dance recap was brought to you by AT&T. I'm telling you, still the most stunning part to me of the entire documentary, or there are two things. One, finding out that the flu game was actually the food poisoning game. I mean, I want a deep dive on that. Like, somebody's got to be deep diving into that right now. But then the other part of it is to have Michael Jordan sit there at the end, and he was shown the video of Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner of the Bulls, explaining that he called Phil Jackson and why the team was dismantled after six. And he said, I've never asked him about it. That's shocking to me. Not because Michael Jordan, the player, hasn't asked him about him, or Michael Jordan, the star, Michael Jordan, the brand. Michael Jordan is an NBA team owner. You're telling me, as a team owner, you've never gone to the owner that was part of your entire legacy and said, all right, I gotta know why. Like, now we're peers. We own the same type of business. We are running in the same circles as peers. How do we not see that? I was stunned by then. Don't forget to tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast. Get you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review ESPN Daily. Available wherever you enjoy your podcast. Mark from Virginia, we're asking what athlete or team you want the next Last Dance doc to be on. What do you got, bud?
Dale Earnhardt.
Oh, why Dale?
Because he's pretty much, I think, the reason NASCAR went to the heights it did in their biggest part of popularity. Richard Petty had a lot to do with it, but I think Dale Earnhardt brought it to the mainstream, and he's the reason it got so popular.
I love the take on it, and I'll double down on it and say it's also interesting because Dale Earnhardt is such a legend with such a legacy, and I think that's what, again, to look at the layers that have made The Last Dance so popular. I've said it's about context, but it's also about how many people were affected as fans rooting for or against Michael Jordan. You'd have that same effect with Dale. So it would be interesting to sort of get the look behind the scenes of NASCAR, Dale Earnhardt, and then also where NASCAR was at the beginning and where how he sort of helped transform all of that. That's a great call on that one. We'll take more of your thoughts. What athlete or team you want the next Last Dance doc to be on? 888-SAY-ESPN. 888-729-3776. Sports are starting to slowly trickle back. NASCAR, we just talked about, they're back in full swings with no fans. You'll hear from the winner of this weekend's race next. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio. First Take, your take on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, SiriusXM Channel 80, and ESPN News. I'm Jason Fitz. If you missed the first hour of today's show, go check it out on demand. The First Take, Your Take podcast brought to you by Capital One. Why settle for average? With Capital One, you can open a savings account with the rate five times the national average. Welcome to banking. Reimagine what's in your wallet. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. We're going to keep getting your take now that The Last Dance is done. What team do you want, or athlete, do you want to see the next Last Dance type documentary on? We'll hear some of your take coming up in just a second, but we want to give you the chance to hear a little from Kevin Harvick. Remember, he won the Real Heroes 400 over the course of the weekend, and obviously all eyes were going to be on NASCAR. The question is, how was it for him? How jarring was it to not have fans there, and how did it all feel for him? He was on Go Look at Wingo this morning. I want you to check out what he had to say.
One of the biggest things that I learned was to get over the anxiety of all the protocols, because as an athlete, you want to perform at the event that you're going to, and the anxiety leading up to the event of, okay, do I feel good? What am I going through when I go through this gate here? And, it was literally a temperature check, put your mask on. We had gone through meeting after meeting with all the NASCAR folks on all the protocols that needed to be put in place. So everybody you know, I already had my mask, I had my hand sanitizer, I had my gloves for any circumstance that I was in, you know, that I needed to. And then I, you know, my temperature was fine, and I drove in the racetrack and sat in my bus for, you know, for 4 hours waiting for the event to start, and then walked out to the car. So, you know, I think for me, that anxiety of getting over the first event and all the things that are running through your mind that you know, you don't have to run through anymore, and because you know how it's going to work and how you felt, and you can get over those emotions. Just being back on the racetrack and having some normalcy for those few hours that we were at the track and in the car were spectacular, to be honest with you, just because, you know, of how much our lives have changed over the last several weeks. But after the race, really put it into perspective for me. You have all that enthusiasm and us being in the car, you have all those emotions. You're not feeding off of anything other than the sheer competition that you have on the racetrack against the other guys and winning the race. And then to have all that emotion built up and get out of the car to dead silence, for me, was the moment that put it all into perspective for me, just of, you know, how different of a situation that we were in.
First, take your take on ESPN News. I always find that interesting, and I will tell this quickly. I think it's funny. I spent so many years of my life playing shows, you know, and at the end of a concert, you have the crowd, and hopefully they applaud, and everything's gone well. I'll never forget the first time I was ever doing radio, and I was in this remote studio all by myself. So I finished my radio show, and everybody disconnected, and the lines just dropped, and I sat there silently, and I was like, all right. Self high five. It's a much different vibe when you're used to something different than that. First, take your take. We're trying to figure out what athlete or team you want on the next Last Dance, Doc. Brian in Georgia, what do you got? What's your take on this one?
Yes. Thanks, Jason, for taking my call. I would like to see one based off the Astros cheating scandal.
Oh, see, now, it's brilliant, and I wish we could get it. I just don't think anybody would keep the footage and show it to us, but my God, if we could make any of it happen, I'm in. Adam in South Carolina, what do you want the next Last Dance Doc to be on?
Hey, Jason. So I grew up as a lifelong Braves fan, and as much as I'd like to see the 90s Braves, quote-unquote, dynasty, I think seeing the Red Sox break the curse, having the, you know, Curt Schilling's bloody ankle coming back in the ALCS, and then possibly segueing that into when the Boston bombings happened and David Ortiz with his moment out on the field. I think that'd be pretty cool to see.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of votes for the 2004 Red Sox. I like that one a lot. And you're right. It's just prominent enough in our minds for it to be there and for it to make a little bit of sense. Kevin in Missouri, what do you got? What's your take on this one?
Hey, sorry, I got cut off earlier. I want to see Barry Switzer, the Outlaw, the Rebel, Tom Osborne, the Saint. It's actually two teams, Oklahoma, Nebraska. If you think about the late 70s, early 80s, that was the last era where the SEC didn't dominate everything. And Barry went on to be a very successful NFL coach with the Cowboys. Tom Osborne went on to be a state senator, athletic director. Think about the players, Billy Sims, Thomas Lott, Johnny Rogers.
Kevin, you're totally right. Sorry, man, we're up against it. I hate to cut you off again, but you're right. I grew up hearing about all of those rivalry moments in that era. I would love to see any peek behind the scenes from two different teams at once. That would be epic. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. It's Shower Sessions, part interview, part concert, all from the shower. We'll tell you more about it later. First, take your take, ESPN Radio.